all around their enormous tree. It was just one more tiny stab of awareness, like those I'd been having all month, listening to colleagues share what they'd planned to do in their off hours. Parties, reunions, baking, flights out of town. After I lost Elliot, and of course after I lost Dad, I'd also lost every tether to tradition. I'm ravenous to get them back. I want to make blueberry muffins on Christmas morning and light the candles at night. I want Abelskivers and books on birthdays and hot dogs on the beach on New Year's. But I also want Thanksgiving to be the day Elliot and I sit on the floor, just the two of us in our underwear eating turkey off the bone. I want to celebrate an anniversary in bed all day, having conversations with our mouths only an inch apart. I'm ready. So I step out onto the cracked parking lot, unsteady in heels, trying to walk gracefully toward him. What I really want to do is jump into his arms, but I manage to keep it together, coming to a stop a foot away. He smells so good. And when he pushes his sunglasses up, his eyes seem nearly amber in the sun. The opening words I've been rehearsing over and over for the past month. When I left Christian's house, I went to the cabin. I fell asleep on the floor, and that's where Dad found me. Fade away into a distant echo. Elliot presses the flowers into my hand and bends, kissing me just below my jaw, right where my pulse is the wildest. I bend and inhale the flowers. They don't actually smell like anything, but they are so brightly colored they're nearly fluorescent. Flowers, aren't you the perfect wedding date?
I picked them over there,
he admits, nodding to a small patch of unruly weeds at the edge of the property. When he turns back and grins, he looks 18 again.
Mom wouldn't let me take a rose from the suite.
He looks me over, his gaze heated as it moves up my chest, my neck, my face. I'm wearing a new dress, and I admit I feel pretty awesome. It's fitted crushed silk, a blaze of orange and red with small beaded spaghetti straps. It makes my brown skin seem golden. Our eyes meet, and I feel my smile explode across my face. We're going to unload everything later. The anticipation of the burden being lifted makes me feel weightless.
Ready?
He asks. Ready. Elliot puts the car in park in front of the enormous Victorian estate, and the engine ticks in the resulting silence. Turning to me, he asks quietly,
You okay?
It was a 10-minute drive. There's no chance he missed my death grip on the door handle the entire time. I'm good.
Okay.
He says now on an exhale and stops me from getting out with a hand on my bare leg, just above my knee. The touch feels loaded, and he seems to realize it at the same time I do, dragging his fingers away.
Let me.
He hops out, jogs around the front of his beat-up Civic, and opens my door with a chivalrous flourish. Behind him, Madrona Manor rises up like something from a fairy tale, with wide, sweeping lawns framing the expanse of his estate. It's a distant cry from the L&M Motel. Obviously, I could have stayed in the Healdsburg house I actually own. There aren't any vacationers currently renting. But although we're unburdening ourselves later, the idea of staying there alone without Dad seemed mildly depressing. Elliot stands, waiting for me to climb out and finally reaching a hand forward.
Are you stuck?
No, just silently melting at the sight of you. I push up, letting him take my hand once I'm standing. I'm good, just...
It's beautiful here.
Because it's chilly out, I'm wearing a wrap around my shoulders, and Elliot takes one step forward, adjusting it where it slipped down my arm.
There.
He runs a thumb over the curve of my shoulder beneath the wrap. His skin is lighter against mine, and the contrasting color looks perfect.
Are you going to be warm enough?
I nod, hooking my arm through his as we make our way toward the main building. It's midday, and the sun shimmers over the tops of the trees, leaving the edges honeyed and gold. Nestled in the hills above Sonoma County, Madrona Manor is surrounded by acres and acres of wooded property and overlooks vast fields of grapevines. Garden grounds seem to spread in every direction. In truth, I should be more curious about this hallowed place, but being near Elliot after taking a month to think about everything, having his body pressed right up against mine, and knowing at any second I could stop him, turn to him, kiss him, I feel like I'm peeking over the lip of a canyon, and at the bottom is a giant ball pit. I just want to dive in and play. Inside the manor, the hall extends straight forward with rooms coming off the main entrance. Elliot plans to go upstairs and check on Andreas in the groom's room. I told Elliot I was driving up from Berkeley last night, when in fact I booked a town car, took a Xanax, and slept the entire ride. I arrived at the motel, stumbled into my room, and slept until my body's alarm clock roused me exactly at 6 this morning. What all of this means, really, is I still haven't seen any of his family. And admittedly, I'm a little anxious about it. But although I'm happy to explore the grounds alone, leaving the Petropolis clan to themselves before the ceremony, Elliot won't have it.
"Come with me," he says, heading toward the wide staircase.
The holidays have yet to be banished to boxes and locked up until next December, and garlands remained wrapped festively around the banister. A small golden Christmas tree brightens the landing at the top.
"They're up here."
I don't want to interrupt the getting ready process, I say, pulling back, hesitating.
"Stop it." He laughs. "You're joking, right? If I come up there without you, they'll just send me back down."
A swarm of birds explodes into motion in my chest as I hear Mr. Nick yelling at George to go grab a suitcase from the car, Nick Jr. teasing Alex about something. I can hear Miss Dina's full round laugh, and her voice, still the same, telling Andreas he should let someone else tie his bow tie because it looks like a limp Peter around his neck. We push the door open, creaking inside, and the entire room falls silent in a hush. Andreas turns from where he'd been futzing with his tie in the mirror. Nick Jr. and Alex straighten from where they appear to have been wrestling near the couch. Miss Dina freezes with her hand on a pin in her hair.
"Macy!"
she gasps. Her eyes immediately fill. She drops the pin, cupping her hands over her mouth. I lift my hand in a shaking wave. Seeing their faces tunnels me back a decade, like I'm home for the first time in so long.
"Hi, everyone."
Elliot pulls me close to his side.
"Doesn't she look beautiful?"
I look up at him in shock, but his lazy grin tells me he's not at all self-conscious under their scrutiny.
"Stunning."
Mr. Nick agrees. Alex runs over, throwing her arms around my shoulders.
"Do you remember me?"
I haven't seen her since she was 3, and couldn't possibly tell her I've thought about her every day since then. Laughing, I wrap my arms around her long, willowy frame, asking, "Do you remember me?"
"Don't,"
Miss Dina says, shaking her head.
"I'm going to cry."
Nick Jr. glances at her and groans.
"Ma, you're already crying."
Elliot lets me go, but doesn't move away as everyone comes over to hug me. When Andreas reaches me, he whispers a quiet,
"Thanks for coming."
And I answer with my own quiet, "Congratulations, meathead." The scene explodes back into noise as Alex launches into a debate with her dad about why she should be allowed to wear her hair up, and George argues with Miss Dina about where he can find the suitcase. Elliot helps Andreas with his tie, and Liz walks in, carrying a tray of snacks for the wedding party. She's wearing a shimmering blue dress. Clearly she's one of the bridesmaids.
"Hey, Macy,"
she says, coming over to me. At the confused stare of the rest of Elliot's family, she reminds them that we see each other every day at work, and the room explodes anew, as they all remember what this means, that little Macy is a doctor now. And I'm hugged all over again. Wine is poured, Alex's hair is brushed down, and then up again to her father and older brother's dismay, and the whole time, Elliot is there, his arm pressed to my arm, my twin heartbeat, a comforting presence.
"Dad,"
Elliot finally says with a quiet, rumbling laugh.
She's 14. She's wearing a floor-length gown with sleeves. She's not going to get pregnant if someone sees the back of her neck.
Mr. Nick glares at Elliot for a few seconds, and then shakes his head at his daughter and wife.
Put it up, I don't care. It's just a lot of skin.
It's my neck.
Alex cries, frustrated. Tell the guys not to look if it bothers them so much. Amen, I say, grinning at her. Her grateful smile is like a sunbeam cracking through the window. As the argument picks up again, Elliot leans down and asks quietly right up against my ear.
Want to walk around the gardens?
I nod, shivering at his proximity, and he guides me toward the door with his hand on my lower back, before reaching for my fingers. I feel the attention of the entire room on our joined hands as we leave, and Alex is confused. I thought she had a boyfriend. Followed by Miss Dina's sharply hissed, shh, and Andreas's,
they broke up, remember?
In our wake. Elliot looks down at me, grinning.
Is it just like you remembered?
I lean into his shoulder. Better. Then, Saturday, September 9th, 11 years ago. The first trip after the summer, after our declaration that we were together, after that sweet, aching kiss, was in mid-September. The air was thick with the relentless heat of Indian summer, and I used it as an excuse to spend the entire weekend in my bikini. Elliot noticed. Unfortunately, Dad noticed, too, and outright required us to spend our time reading downstairs or outside, and not in the closet. That Saturday, we spread a blanket out on Elliot's scraggly front lawn beneath the enormous black oak, and gave our updates on friends and school and favorite words, but it had a different weight to it. We whispered it now, lying face to face on our sides, with Elliot's fingers playing with the ends of my hair or brushing against my neck, his gaze dancing across the swell of my breasts. According to rule number 29, when Macy is over 16 and has her first serious boyfriend, make sure she's being safe. Dad put me on the pill almost immediately after that visit. I was still several months away from turning 18, and Dad told me he planned to call my female doctor, but only after giving me a stilted, awkward lecture that it wasn't permission to have sex with Elliot, per se, but that he was trying to protect our futures. Not that he had to worry. Despite seeing each other every weekend throughout October, Elliot and I never came that close to sex, not since that day on the floor of the closet, his body over mine, working on instinct. And Elliot was the one taking things slow, not me. He kept telling me it was because every tiny step was a first. Everything we did together we would only do for the first time with this one person our whole lives. It seemed a foregone conclusion that we'd be together forever. We hadn't said love yet. We hadn't made promises. But it was as impossible to imagine falling out of love with Elliot as it was to imagine holding my breath for an hour. So we were winding our way carefully through exploration, kissing for hours, swimming together in the river, my legs slippery and cold around his waist, my stomach covered in goosebumps, sensitive to the feel of his bare torso pressed against me. Weekdays back at school became infused with this desperate anticipation. We agreed to Skype once a week, Wednesdays, which made it painful to sit through classes that day. Those nights, he would look at me through his camera, eyes wide. I'd think about kissing him. I'd even tell him what I was thinking, and he'd groan and change the subject. Afterward, I'd climb into bed and imagine my fingers were his, knowing he was doing the same. And weekends, whenever we had the smallest window, were a blur of kisses on the floor, our mouths moving together until our lips felt raw, our breath shallow from the exertion of wanting. But that was it. We kissed. Clothes stayed on. Hands stayed put. Until they didn't. Late October. It was pouring rain and miserable outside. Dad took the car into town to get groceries, leaving me and Elliot alone in the house. It wasn't premeditated. He didn't even spare a glance back at us, reading in the living room by the wood-burning stove. He simply called out that we were out of milk and he was getting stuff for dinner. The door closed with a quiet click. The car tires crunched on the gravel until the sound disappeared. I looked up at Elliot across the room, and my skin flushed hot. He was already crawling across the floor to me, and then he was hovering over me in the shadows of the flickering fire. I still remember the way he lifted my shirt, kissing a path from my belly button to my collarbone. I remember how, for the first time ever, he figured out the clasp of my bra, laughing into my mouth as his fingers fought with the elastic. I remember the reverence of his palm as it slid from the open fastening around my ribs beneath the underwire. His hand came over my bare breast, his thumb and finger closing over the peak. It seemed like light flowed out of me from every pore. The pleasure and need were nearly blinding. He followed with his tongue, wet, his lips closing over me, sucking, and I pulled his thigh between my legs, insane for the relief, rocking against him until I melted, coming in front of him for the first time. He stared down at me, pupils huge and black, mouth slack.
"Did you?"
I nodded, smiling, drugged. The car tires crunched back up the gravel driveway, and Elliot let out a sharp, frustrated laugh, pulling away.
"I should go home anyway."
He nodded down. I looked down, too, at the heel of his hand pressed to the front of his jeans, seeking relief. He started to stand, but stopped, still kneeling between my legs, but now staring down at my bare chest. It was the first time he'd really looked, and the intensity of his gaze was like a match to the fuel in my veins. I reached for his free hand. The car door slammed shut.
"Macy,"
Elliot warned, but his eyes remained unblinking, and his arm moved without resistance when I pulled his hand down to my skin. "He still has to get the groceries." I put his fingers on my stomach, ran them up my body. The trunk slammed too. Elliot jerked his arm away. Slowly, I sat up, fastening my bra and pulling my shirt down. Dad's keys fit into the lock, and he let himself in, glancing at us in the living room. I was exactly where he'd left me. Elliot hovered near the other end of the sofa, hands deep in his pockets. "Hey, Dad," I said. He stopped, arms loaded with groceries.
"Everything okay?"
Elliot nodded.
"I was just waiting until you got back to head home."
I looked up at him, grinning. "That was sweet."
"Thanks, Elliot,"
Dad said, smiling at him.
"You're welcome to join us for dinner."
Dad walked into the kitchen, and I looked down at Elliot's button fly with a nearly obsessive need to feel him beneath the denim. He bent low so that I had to look at his face.
"I see where you're looking,"
he whispered.
"Your trouble."
I stretched, kissing him. "Soon," I said quietly in return. Now, Sunday, December 31st. There are more than 8 acres of grounds at Madrona Manor, and I swear we walked every single one of them. 2 hours we spent strolling, catching up, talking idly about tiny things, our favorite delis, late-blooming obsessions with Castelvetrano olives, books we've loved and hated, political fears and hopes, dream vacation destinations. And still, the last New Year's we knew each other feels like a chunk of radioactive meteor held in a jar in the palm of my hand. I feel it every second. I'm doing everything to avoid opening it until later. The afternoon sun dips behind the trees, and a chill descends. Car tires crunch on the gravelly driveway in the distance, luring us back to the great lawn, which is decorated with flowered garlands and dotted with heat lamps, cocktail tables, and waitstaff circulating hors d'oeuvres before the ceremony.
"I need to head upstairs to get ready. You okay?"
I nod, and Elliot bends as he cups my face, kissing my forehead and then my cheek, seemingly out of instinct. He doesn't register what he's done as he pulls away, smiling down at me. Not once on his journey to the house to meet up with the groomsmen does he turn back, eyes wide in realization that he's just kissed me the way he did so many times when he was mine. Once he's gone, I look around, realizing I don't know anyone here. The entire Petropolis family is inside, and although I've seen the cousins, aunts, and uncles on occasion, I don't know any of them well enough to just walk up and break into conversation. Maybe this is why your circle is so small. Sabrina's voice rings in my ear. A small circle is a quality circle. I snark back, reaching for a bacon-wrapped shrimp as it passes on a tray. I'm lifting it to my mouth when a hand comes around my elbow. Turning in surprise, I blurt, "Oh, sorry," and begin to hand back the hors d'oeuvre until I realize it's only Alex and I've just dropped the shrimp into her hand. She stares down at it, and then up at me before shrugging and popping it in her mouth. "Come with me," she mumbles around the bite. "We're sitting up front." "What?" I say, resisting when she tugs me forward. No argument," she says, marching forward. "I have strict instructions from Mom. Your family." This catches in my throat. A ball of cottony emotion gets trapped in there. Pulling my wrap around my shoulders, I follow her to a seat on the groom's side, in the very front row. Alex sits in the third seat in, pulling me down beside her in the fourth. "It's starting soon," she says. "Mom told me to go sit so people would make their way over. Are they?" I look behind her and see that, yes, people are beginning to make their way toward the ushers waiting at the entrance to the aisle. Seats are filling, the sun is setting, and the scene is breathtaking. "I've wanted to meet you for years," Alex says, staring ahead at the altar, a small wooden arch decorated with flowers so lush I want to reach out and pinch a petal to see if it's real. "Well, meet again." "Me?" She was only 3 when Elliot and I had our falling out. Falling out. God, what a weird phrase. Other people have a falling out. What we had felt like a rupture. But really, was it? A breach along the fault line, maybe. A mallet cracked against our weak spot. And fate went in with a jackhammer. Alex nods, turning to me. She looks so much like Elliot at 14 that my breath is paralyzed for a second, like I've been punched in the solar plexus. Her eyes are hazel, wide behind her glasses. Her hair is thick and dark, barely tamed into submission by the flowers pinned around her oval face. Her neck is long, swan-like, hands delicate and bony. On Alex, it looks graceful somehow, probably because she dances and she's learned to use her slim build to her advantage. Elliot's body always just seemed a little like a box full of tools. Sharp angles, long bones, dangerous when clumsily wielded. "He loves you so much," she says. "I swear he didn't bring a girl home forever." My heart slows. She nods. "Seriously, my parents thought he was gay. They were like, 'Elliot, you know we love you no matter what. We just want you to be happy.' And he'd be like, 'I really appreciate that, guys.' And then we'd all just stare at him like, 'So when are you going to bring your boyfriend home?'" I laugh a little, not sure what to say. Haltingly, I murmur, "But he did eventually bring someone home. I'm sure they liked her." She shrugs. "Rachel was nice." My heart slows. Rachel was the first girlfriend he brought home? That was, what, a year ago? Alex looks back over her shoulder to check the progress of the seating. It's filled up a bit, so she leans in closer as the guitarist and vocalist begin preparing to play the processional. "Mom called her Macy like 3 times the first time she came for dinner." "Oof," I say, awkward. I'm additionally sympathetic now that I've met Rachel. A lot more things make sense about that first encounter. "Anyway," Alex says, smiling at me. "He eventually admitted to us that he's been in love with you since high school. I'm glad you're back in his life." Quickly, she holds up her hands, adding, "Even if you're just friends. Okay, I'll shut up now." She bites her lip and then adds in a rush, "And I'm really sorry about your dad, Macy. I don't remember him, but Mom said he was a really nice man." "Thank you, sweetie." I reach around her shoulders, pulling her in for a hug. "I missed you all like crazy." A hush overtakes the crowd as the guitarist begins, strumming a simple, aching prelude before the vocalist launches gently into Jeff Buckley's version of Hallelujah. The first people down the aisle are an older couple, presumably Elsa's grandparents. They sit in the section opposite us as Miss Dina and Mr. Nick come down the aisle with Andreas between them. Miss Dina's smile is so brilliant, it traps my breath in my throat, and I feel the sting of tears across the surface of my eyes. It's not just that it's a wedding, though I always cry at weddings. It's the song, it's the setting, it's being back in the arms of the people I love most in the whole world. It's not feeling alone for the first time in as long as I can remember. Andreas stands at the head of the aisle, watching in anticipation of his bride. Miss Dina sits beside Alex, but reaches over her lap. Taking my hand and holding it so tight, I feel her love and her confusion and, above it all, her relief in that single trembling touch. Next is Nick Jr. with one of the bridesmaids. He's filled out, barrel-chested like his father, tall like both of his parents. With a full beard, he looks more lumberjack than district attorney. I can't really imagine him in shark skin, if I'm being honest. Then it's George and Liz. Arm in arm, all easy smiles. They're such a perfect combination of happy faces and confident strides that I catch myself grinning, eyes brimming. Alex hands me a tissue. Two criers on either side of me. Shh, Miss Dina whispers. Just wait, it'll afflict you soon. I'm not prepared for it somehow. I'd forgotten that Elliot would be walking down the aisle. And the sight of him with the petite blonde maid of honor on his arm, his smile calm as he makes eye contact with the gathered guests, is a blow to the emotions wrapped tightly in my gut. Warmth bleeds free. He looks so good. Smiling, well over 6 feet tall now, easy in his skin. He looks at me after he leaves the maid of honor near the altar, and our eyes catch and hold. It's been hours since I thought of my ex-fiancé, but seeing Elliot now, at the altar and in his tux, makes me realize how monumentally wrong everything felt with Sean. How wrong it would feel with anyone but Elliot. Stepping back, he files into position at the head of the groomsmen and manages to pull his eyes away from me as the music changes, and the guitar begins strumming the opening notes to Elvis Costello's She. The crowd stands. I know I should be looking for the bride, but my head is the only one facing forward, unable to stop staring at Elliot. He can feel my attention, I'm sure, because he blinks away, turning his head just the slightest bit, meeting my eyes. There's a question there in his, the playfully obvious, "What the hell is wrong with you?" I don't know what else to do, so I simply mouth the word, "Yes." Yes, I'm yours. Yes, I'm ready. Yes, I love you. Then, Friday, December 8th, 11 years ago.
God, this book is amazing, Elliot whispered, turning the page.
Inwardly, I gloated. Finally, Mr. Snobby McClassics Pants was reading Wally Lamb. I rolled to my stomach, looking up at him on the futon. I told you you'd love him.
You did,
he said.
And I do.
We were finally allowed back in the closet together, door open, because it was too cold to send us outside, and Dad didn't want to listen to us whispering downstairs all day long. Senior year was already completely insane. And most weekends in November had been spent at home in Berkeley, preparing for college applications, SATs, and honor theses. We were trying to apply to schools in the same cities, if not the exact same colleges, and the intensity and our need to coordinate had us checking in with each other constantly. This was the first weekend I'd actually been with Elliot in 5 weeks, and there was a forceful undercurrent, pushing us closer and closer and closer together, even with the door open. "You should worship me," I told him. He looked at me over the rims of his glasses, brows raised.
I do.
I grinned. Or be my slave.
I would.
He closed the book, leaning his elbows on his long thighs.
I am.
I had his full attention now. Fan me with palm fronds and feed me tiny succulent grapes. It felt like the air stopped moving between us.
Say that word again.
Elliot asked hoarsely. Fan.
No.
Tiny. He sighed, exasperated.
Macy.
Grapes. He turned back to his book, releasing a weary growl.
Pain in the ass.
I grinned, licked my lips, and gave him what he wanted. Succulent. He looked up, eyes dark. Door open. Succulent. I whispered again, and he crawled to the floor, leaning in to kiss up my neck, tickling. I squirmed, glancing at the door. You are such a word nerd. His tongue followed the path of my throat, and I heard his smile when he said,
Put your hand down my pants.
I cackled, whispering sharply, What? No, my dad is literally 20 feet away. Our eyes went wide in unison as just then the car engine started in the driveway, tires crunched down, 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 and then disappeared. Okay, I guess he's more than 20 feet away, I mumbled. Elliot pulled back and stared at me, eyes dark and carnivorous, and it felt like a switch bubbling something up inside me. I reached out and finally put my hand over the buttons on his jeans, felt what I'd really, really wanted to feel there. Now what? I asked. This was happening. This was happening. I was touching it. Him. It. Elliot's eyebrows shot up to his hairline.
You don't know?
I'm not sure. I said, left with no more questions when he growled out a smile and covered my mouth with his. We fell back to the floor, legs and arms entangled, lips bruising against teeth, messy and desperate and completely perfect. After all the forced physical distance and discussions about everything we wanted to do to each other, and never knowing when or how we would get time alone, this tiny window felt like the Hope Diamond dropped into our palms. I had never known this feeling, this ache that bloomed in my stomach and spread, lower and hot, driving me past my senses and pinpointing my entire universe down to this one sensation, and then the next. And then wanting what came after. My shirt came off. My pants were unzipped and peeled away. I pushed closer, afraid that even naked we wouldn't be close enough to satisfy this new hunger. He bent down, licking my neck, my breasts, and then returned to me, greedy lips sucking at mine, and then back down over my chest. His hand pressed flat against my stomach, and fingers teased at the hem of my underwear.
Too fast.
He asked, breathing heavily, and I shook my head, even though he couldn't see me from where his mouth explored my breasts. No, I said out loud. It was too slow. Not too fast, too slow. Fire crackled up and down every nerve ending, and I wanted more, even if I didn't know exactly what that was.
Shit, Macy. This is insane. Good insane. You feel insane under me.
I laughed because Elliot's rare incoherence was strangely reassuring, and then his lips were on my mouth, swallowing my laugh and making it his. His tongue slipping over mine as his hand cupped my breast, squeezed, our sounds muffled by the way we could barely bring ourselves up for air. His fingers went lower again, slipping over my ribs, across my navel, below the cotton to exactly where I needed them. And he made a strangled sound at the same time that I ground out something unintelligible. His hips shifted over me, seeking the same rhythm as his fingertips gliding across my skin. In a flash, he was moving down, tucking my underwear off and kissing my belly, hips, and then lower, almost wild with the want that mirrored mine. He shook below me, between my thighs, shoulders trembling under my grip. And I missed his weight on top, but whatever he had decided to do with his mouth distracted me from any other coherent thought. It was warm, soft suction, hands on my legs, resisting the way they seemed to want to close around his head, and the mad sensation of tongue and lips and his gasps of air. He was doing that thing I'd barely let myself imagine. He moved back up when I started gasping, biting and kissing along my skin, wilder than I would have ever imagined. But then, in the moment, I realized it could never be any other way with us.
Sorry, he said. I wanted to keep going, but...
He closed his eyes, biting his bottom lip and groaning as if he was trying to keep himself together. It's okay. Come here. I wanted his weight on me. I wanted to see him hovering over my body and then burn the image into my brain.
I seriously thought I was going to come.
He added with a laugh against my lips, his mouth still wet from me, and with an urgency behind his touch that made me a little wild. I pushed ineffectually at his belt, and then my fingers remembered function, pulling through loops and undoing one fascinating button at a time. And then my hands felt the bare skin of his flat stomach, his narrow hips, the soft hair on the backs of his thighs as I worked his pants down around his knees. He was heavy on me, hard and thick against my hip, and I arched to him, wanting to rub across him there. I want to, I began, reaching for him and finding it. My mind turned to mush at the sound he made, at the feeling of him so warm and hard in my hand. Do you want to?
Have sex?
He asked, head bobbing in a frantic nod, eyes rapt.
Yes, yes, I do. I do, I do, I do, Macy, but fuck, I don't have any protection.
Bill, I gasped as he shifted and I felt him slide across my thigh. Smooth and soft skin over something not at all soft. Elliot lifted his chin in surprise.
You're on the pill?
It was one of Mom's rules. Dad put me on in October. He reached between us, and when he rubbed himself across me, I was completely gone. I barely heard him ask,
You sure, Mace? Look at me.
At the soft pulse of his voice, I moved my gaze from the fascinating place where he was about to be in me to his eyes, which were almost black with hunger, but patient and waiting, too. Please, I said. It felt so good if he kept rubbing over me like that. I'm sure. He looked down and guided himself to the right place before leaning over me and resting his elbows near my shoulders. This felt like the most natural thing in the world. My legs slid up and over his hips. His lips found mine. He moved forward an inch. Not yet inside, but there.
This is not going to be a marathon. He groaned. I'm barely hanging on.
I just want to feel you. He pushed forward an inch more, but stopped when I cried out at the commotion in my body, at the cohesion of sense and stimulation. His eyes were riveted to my face, and then rolled back in his head as I used my leg curled around his thigh to pull him quickly and roughly all the way inside me. I bit his shoulder at the sharp stab of pain, his body muffling my cry. Elliot's hips shifted carefully back, and then in again, and I felt the tearing pleasure pain of him over and over as he started moving in earnest, pushing in and pulling out of me, again, again, faster.
You're okay?
He gasped. I managed a strangled, yes.
Oh, God, I'm...
I held him to me, with arms and legs banded around him, my eyes clenched against the tight pinching of it, my heart wanting to keep him inside more than my body needed him out.
I'm coming,
he gasped, and then shook beneath my hands, his breath held high and tight in his shoulders as he fell. I felt what it did to him, felt every single shift inside me. In an echo somewhere, I heard sound, feet. A voice. Desire still echoed through me, ricocheting against the sharp pain between my legs. Elliot's touch was suddenly gone. The entire front of my body was cool without him over me, and I felt oddly, immediately hollow. With a foggy head, I realized he was scrambling back and pulling me up.
Macy?
Dad called from downstairs, or underwater, I couldn't be sure. Elliot's face swam into focus above me, his brow damp, eyes wide, lips bright red and still wet from my kisses.
Get up, Mace.
Jerked into realization, somehow I found my voice, pushing out a hoarse, Yeah, Dad! Elliot yanked his pants up and threw his shirt over his head, as my own fumbling fingers struggled to jerk on my pants. I paused at the brilliant streak of blood on my thigh, blinking up to Elliot, whose eyes snared with mine as he buttoned his jeans.
"You okay?"
he whispered. Footsteps echoed down the long upstairs hallway.
"Yeah."
I stood on weak, shaky legs to find my shirt, tug it on, and shove my bra under a pillow with my foot just as Dad walked in. He paused in the doorway, taking in the scene. Elliot, having lunched himself onto the pillows in the corner, was reading my worn copy of the Joy Luck Club without his glasses on. His face was red, his breathing uneven. I stood near the door and realized I had no idea what my hair looked like, but I imagined it could not be good. Elliot had dug his fingers into it, pulled apart my braid, and slid his hands over and into my hair again and again. My body bucked with the memory. Dad looked me over and smirked. "Hey," I said, and to his credit, he simply replied,
"Hey, guys."
"What's up?" I asked, trying not to gasp for air.
"May, sweetheart, I'm sorry, but do you think you could be ready to go in an hour? I just had to run into town to get a fax, of all things. We need to get back tonight."
He looked genuinely apologetic. "We have two more nights here," I thought. But even as crushing disappointment spread through me, I nodded brightly. "No problem, Dad." He waved to Elliot, who waved back, and then left. Slowly, I turned. Elliot's eyes were closed, his hands over his face as he finally gasped for air, no longer needing to appear relaxed. I moved to him, crawling into his lap, desperately wanting the feel of him against me.
"Holy shit, that was close," he whispered.
I nodded. I didn't want to leave. Adrenaline crashed through me, making my limbs shake. I wanted to curl up with him and talk about what we'd just done. He turned his head, kissing my temple.
"You were bleeding. I know it's normal, but I just want to be sure. Did I hurt you?"
I looked up at the ceiling, trying to find an answer that felt both true and reassuring. Not more than I expected. His lips found mine. Slow, careful kisses dotted over my mouth, my chin, my cheeks.
"You need to pack,"
he said reluctantly, pulling away. "Yeah." He stood, lifting me with him, and then put me down.
"Email me tonight."
I nodded. I was still shaking, because of what we'd done, and because we almost just got caught doing it. He cupped my face in both hands, searching my eyes.
"Was it okay?"
"Yeah," I bit back a nervous laugh. "I mean, I definitely want to do it again." The adrenaline was making me feel speedy and wired.
"Okay."
He nodded frantically.
"Okay, so we'll talk. You're okay?"
"Yeah," I smiled. "You?" He blew out a controlled breath.
"I'm going to go home and take a long shower and relive all but the minute your dad was standing there and I was still sort of hard."
I leaned against him, my forehead to his chest. "I don't want to go." His lips rested on the crown of my head.
"I know."
"Did we just have sex?" I asked quietly. With his thumbs, he tilted my face so I'd look up at him.
"Yeah, we did."
He leaned forward, kissed me once, twice, softly on the lips, and then a third deep kiss. Finally, he pulled away, kissed the tip of my nose, and ducked out of the closet. And I thought, as I heard his footsteps jogging down the stairs, how strange and wonderful it was that we had never said I love you. And we hadn't needed to. Now, Sunday, December 31st.
Despite being born to the same parents and raised in the same house, Andreas and I could not have been more different,
Elliot says, opening his wedding toast and sliding one hand into the pocket of his tuxedo pants. He stands at the front of the expanse of tables and flowers and candlelight, a tiny grin working at his mouth.
"I was studious. He was..."
Elliot scratches his eyebrow.
"Well, he was athletic."
The guests laugh knowingly.
"I was obsessive. He was slovenly."
Another appreciative rumble.
"I learned Latin. He primarily communicated in grunts and frowns."
At this, I join in the genuine laughter.
"But anyone who knows us knows we have one important thing in common."
Elliot glances briefly down to me, sidelong, almost as if he can't help himself, and then back over to Andreas.
When we love for good.
An emotional murmur ripples across the room, and my heart dissolves into a puddle of warm honey.
Andreas met Else when he was 28. Sure, he'd had girlfriends before, but nothing like this. He walked into Mom and Dad's house one Saturday and looked physically windblown, eyes wide, mouth agape. Andreas had lost the ability to speak in his normal, very basic vocabulary.
Laughter rises up again, jubilant.
He brought her home for dinner, and you would think he'd invited the Queen of England.
Elliot smiled at his mother.
He nagged Mom about what she'd cook. He nagged Dad about not having the Niners game on the whole time. He nagged me about not doing something weird, like quoting Kafka or performing magic tricks with my green beans. For a man who'd never voluntarily cleaned his own bedroom, this meticulous behavior was notable.
My smile spreads wide across my face, a giddy, lovesick fault line.
And he's been as attentive and loyal and devoted for each day since. For 4 years, I've watched you fall more deeply in love. To say that Else is well-suited for Andreas is an understatement. Apparently, she loves meatheads.
Laughter.
And apparently, she also liked us well enough.
Elliot lifts his glass, smiling warmly down at his brother and new sister-in-law.
Else, welcome to our family. I can't promise that it will ever be quiet, but I can promise that you will never be so loved as when you come home to us.
Cheers ring out, glasses clink. Elliot bends to hug them both and then returns to his seat beside me. Beneath the table, he takes my hand. His is shaking.
That was awesome,
I tell him. He bends, smiling as he takes a bite of his salmon with his free hand.
Yeah?
I lean over, press my lips to his cheek. His skin is warm and a little rough now, like the mildest sandpaper. It's all I can do to not bare my teeth and bite him the tiniest bit.
Yeah.
When my lips come away from him, they've left twin petals of lipstick. I reach up, reluctantly smearing it away with my thumb. I sort of liked it there. Elliot continues to eat, smiling at me as I fuss over him. And never in my entire life have I felt so blissfully like someone's wife. The feeling is bubbly, like being drunk from a shot, the way it warms the path from throat to stomach. But here, everything feels warm. I pull his hand in mine closer, onto my lap, high on my thigh. He pauses with his fork en route to his mouth, sending me a sly smile, but then takes the bite and chews, leaning to his left to listen when Andreas taps his shoulder. The music begins for the first dance, and Andreas and Else stand, moving out into the center of the room, dancing solo for only a few bars before the DJ calls everyone out. And then Miss Dina and Mr. Nick are out there, and then Else's parents, too. Elliot looks over at me, eyebrow raised in obvious question. And here we go. He leads me to a spot near the center of the dance floor, pulling me with an arm around my waist until I'm right up against him, chest to chest, stomach to stomach, hips to hips. We sway. We're not even really dancing, but our proximity sets my body on fire, and I can feel what it does to him, too. Right up against me, he's half hard, his posture exposing the hunger he feels. I want closer, too. With one hand clasped in his, the other on his shoulder slides around his neck, then slowly into his hair. Elliot tucks our joined hands against his chest, and then bends, pressing his cheek to mine.
I love you,
he says.
I'm sorry that I can't help my body's reaction to you.
It's okay. I count out 15 heartbeats before I'm able to add, I love you too. He reacts to this with a tiny catch in his breath, a slight tremor in his shoulders. It's the first time he's ever heard me say it.
You do?
My cheek rubs along his when I nod. I always have. You know that. His lips are close enough to my ear that they brush against the shell when he asks,
Then why did you leave me?
I was hurt, I tell him. And then I was broken. Now he reacts. His feet come to a stop on the floor.
What broke you?
I don't want to talk about it here. He pulls back, eyes flickering between mine as if there might be different messages communicated there.
Do you want to leave?
I don't know. I do want to leave, but not to talk. Whenever you can, I say. Later is fine.
Where?
Anywhere. All I know is that I need to be alone with him. Need to, in this restless, straining way. I want to be alone with him. I want him. I don't care where we go. I slide my other hand up his chest, around his neck and into his hair. Elliot's breath catches when he realizes what I'm doing, pulling him down to kiss me. His lips come over mine in a fever. Hands moving to cup my face, to hold me close as if my kiss is a delicate, fleeting thing. His kiss is an aching prayer. Devotion pours from him. He sucks my bottom lip, my top, tilting his head for more and deeper before I pull back, reminding him with a tiny flicker of my eyes where we are and just how many people have noticed. Elliot doesn't care about them. He takes my hand, leading me down the steps from the lit dance floor and into the gardens. Our shoes swish through wet grass. I pull my dress up into my fist, jogging after him. Deeper down the trail we go, into blackness, where all I hear is the buzzing of insects and the ripple of wind through the leaves. The voices disappear into the light behind us. Then, Sunday, December 31st, 11 years ago. Dad materialized at my side, holding a flute of champagne for him and a flute of what smelled suspiciously like ginger ale for me. "Not even one glass of hooch?" I asked, pretending to scowl. "This party sucks." Dad took this in stride with an impressed sweep of his attention around the room, because this party quite obviously did not suck. It was in the garden court of the Palace Hotel, and was packed with beautiful people who were dripping jewelry and were thankfully surprisingly lively. The entire room had been decorated with thousands, maybe even a million, tiny white lights. We were spending New Year's in the heart of a constellation. Even though I was away from Elliot, I couldn't exactly complain. It was only a few minutes away from midnight, and the crowd was growing thick around us, pressing in closer to the bar so everyone could get a drink in hand before the new year was rung in. Tucked beneath my arm, my clutch began to vibrate. I looked up at Dad, who gave me the single nod of permission, and stepped out into the hall. I glanced down at my phone. 11:55. Elliot was calling me. "Hey," I said, breathless.
"Hey, Mace."
His voice was thick and happy. I bit my lip to keep from laughing. "Have we had a couple of cocktails, Mr. Petropoulos?"
"One or two," he laughed. "Apparently I'm a lightweight."
"Because you're not a drinker." Moving deeper into the quiet hallway, I leaned against the wall there. The clamor from the party faded into an array of background noise. Voices, glasses clinking, music. "Where are you?"
"Party."
He fell quiet, and I heard shuffling in the background, the sound of a doorbell in the distance.
"At, someone's house?"
"Someone." He hesitated, and with the intake of air I could hear on the other line, the way he held it, I knew what was coming.
"Christians."
I was quiet for a beat. I knew only enough about Christian to feel faintly uneasy about his influence. Things always turned too wild when Christian was around. At least that's how Elliot spun it. "Ah."
"Don't awe me, missy,"
he said, voice low and slow.
"It's a house party. It's a party with lots of people in a big house."
"I know," I said, taking a deep breath. "Just be careful. Are you having fun?"
"No."
Grinning at this, I asked, "Who else is there?"
"People,"
he mumbled.
"Brandon, Christian."
A pause.
"Emma."
My stomach clenched.
"Other people from school,"
he quickly added. I heard something fall and crash in the background. Elliot's quiet,
"Ow, stop,"
and a girl laughing his name before he seemed to move somewhere quieter.
And I don't know, Mace. You're not here, so I don't really give a shit who is.
I laughed tightly. This call felt like a shove forward into a life where we had beers together and dorm rooms and hours upon hours alone. I felt our future looming, teasing, tempting.
Where are you?
He asked. I'm at the glitzy soiree.
Right, right. Black tie. Society.
I looked back over my shoulder into the wide ballroom. Everyone around me is hammered.
Sounds awful.
Sounds like your party, I shot back, watching Dad across the room talking with a pretty blonde. Dad seems to be having a decent time.
Are you wearing something fancy?
I looked down at my shimmering green dress. Yeah, a green sequined dress. I look like a mermaid.
Like Disney princess?
I laughed. No. Running my hand down my stomach, I added, but I think you'd like it.
Is it short?
Not really. Knee length?
Tight?
Biting my lip, I lowered my voice. Unnecessarily, for sure, the party was roaring. Not skin tight. Fitted-ish.
Eh,
he grunted.
Wouldn't you rather be wearing jeans and a sweatshirt with me? On my lap?
I giggled at his missing filter. Definitely.
I love you.
I froze, closing my eyes at the sound of these words. Say it again, I thought, and then immediately wondered if this was really how I wanted to hear him confess this while he was drunk, for the first time as far as I knew, and many miles away.
I do,
he growled.
I love you so fucking much. I love you, and I lust you, and want you. I love you as the person I want to be with forever. I just... Macy, will you marry me?
Time stopped. Planets aligned and then shifted apart. Years passed. The voices and music and clinking of glasses all around me faded to nothing, and all I could hear was the echo of his blurted proposal. I stuttered through several sounds before I was able to speak. Unfortunately, what? Was the first thing to come out coherently.
Shit,
he groaned.
Shit, I just totally messed that up.
Elliot? His voice came out muffled when he said,
Will you come see me? I want to ask you to marry me, in person.
I looked around the room, my heart a blazing thunderbolt in my chest. I'm not sure I can come up tonight. This is huge.
It is huge, but it's real.
Okay, I hear you, I said, pinching my eyes closed. He told me he loved me and asked me to marry him in one conversation, over the phone. It's just, there is no way Dad would let me get on the road with all the drunk people. He was silent for so long that I looked down at my phone to make sure I hadn't lost the call. Elliot?
Do you love me?
I exhaled, blinked away tears. This wasn't how I wanted this conversation, how I wanted to discuss our future. But here it was, in my face, demanding to happen like this. You know I do. I don't want to do this over the phone.
I know you don't, but do you know what I mean? Do you want to marry me? Do you want to make this forever? At Goat Rock, and the library, and walking everywhere, and traveling. Do you want to touch me, and be with me, and wake up with my mouth on you, or do you want me to be the one to give you orgasms, or, fuck, watch you have them, or whatever? Do you think about a life with me, or marrying me?
Elle.
I do,
he said in a breathless rush.
All the time I do, Macy.
I almost couldn't speak. My pulse was firing so heavily. You know I do, too.
Come to me tonight, please. Macy, please.
Noisemaker started blowing, and confetti fell from invisible containers somewhere high above my head, but all I heard was the crackle of the line. I'll come next weekend, okay? He sighed, a universe of weight buried in the sound.
Do you promise?
Of course I promise. I looked across the room and saw Dad walking toward me, a rare, wide smile lighting up his face. Noise filled the other end of the phone, and I could hardly hear Elliot anymore.
Macy, I can't hear you. It's super loud here.
Elle, go have fun, but be careful, okay? You can give me my New Year's kiss next Saturday.